Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 17 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Victor Rosenberg from Tropiglass Technologies, a company that invented and is commercializing what they call intelligent glass. Glass that can act as a solar collector, an energy source, an insulation material, and even replace curtains or blinds. Now, Victor tells me about this invention and the challenges of getting the idea from his head to a prototype and then to production, along with all the needed financial support along the way. It's another fascinating interview with lots of lessons for entrepreneurs, so stay tuned. Now, this podcast, as always, is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative business owners save time and money by and grow their business by making their websites achieve more. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do more than just websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of the internet in innovative ways. So if you want to learn more, then go to our website at innovabiz.com.au. Or if you're ready to find out how our magic can help you, then sign up for one of our website accelerator sessions at innovabiz.com.au/WAC. Before we meet Victor, a quick competition announcement. This week's prize is a copy of the book Making Ideas Happen, Overcoming the Obstacles Between Vision and Reality by Scott Belsky. It's a really fascinating book in which Belsky shows how everybody has the capacity to make ideas happen. Stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that prize later on in the interview. Now, without further ado, let's get into the innovation hive and get the buzz from Victor Rosenberg.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on the episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Perth in Western Australia, Victor Rosenberg, the founder and the executive chairman of Tropiglass Technologies. Welcome to the podcast, Victor. It's a privilege to have you here.
Thanks, Jürgen, and it's very nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, now Tropiglass is developing and commercializing a fascinating technology that turns one of the world's most common building materials, glass, into an energy source as a solar collector. At the same time, that glass also provides considerable insulation properties and so much more, but we'll learn about that from Victor later on. He describes it as intelligent glass.
Yes.
Now, before we learn more about Tropiglass Technologies, a quick competition announcement to give people an incentive to comment on the podcast. And that's the prize is a copy of the book Making Ideas Happen, Overcoming the Obstacles Between Vision and Reality by a chap called Scott Belsky. It's a really fascinating book in which Belsky describes that everybody has the capacity to make ideas happen as long as they are prepared to modify their organizational habits, engage the broader community, and develop leadership capability so that they can transform that idea into reality. So I thought that was a fitting prize today because I'm pretty sure we're going to learn many of these things as we hear about Victor's journey. So stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that prize later on in the interview. Now, Victor, as I said, great to have you here on the podcast. Before we learn a little bit more about the innovative stuff you're doing at Tropiglass Technologies, I noticed that your background is a pharmacist and in chemistry, so we have a little bit in common there. Have you always been interested in science and interested in invention? So from a young child's age, or did you have other aspirations?
Nah, you know what? I was always keen to be involved in making something. That was always part of it.
Yeah.
And yes, I qualified as a pharmacist, and even when I qualified as a pharmacist, we were always looking at new methods of developing stuff, producing stuff, so it gets a bit of uniqueness. And in fact, I also branched out into the food business as part of another company parallel to the pharmaceutical, where we developed, in fact, we were the first to develop to put condiments in tubes without preservatives. Mm. And in fact, in Anuga, which was the biggest food show in the world in 1983, I won a world award for the innovation and the food development. Okay. So, carry on.
So you've always been developing and doing things out of the box.
Yes, and innovating.
Yeah.
And eventually I sold those businesses to a big multinational company, and we then came to live in Australia from South Africa. And again, I was looking at where do I see the biggest opportunities for business and possibly to be involved in, making the world better.
Mm.
And that's where I looked at the energy environmental space. So that was where I started. And I really saw that as not a dot-com type industry. That was here to stay. That's real long-term stuff. Long-term management, long-term developments, whatever, whatever. And I looked at the window and said, that's surely got to be the obvious place to go. And that's where I started, and that's what I actually have created. But the first development we made didn't quite work out that successful, where we just wanted to basically remove the infrared from coming into motor cars, for example. I was looking at the motor.
Okay, yeah. Mm.
We developed the product, and the problem, we used organic materials, and I learned out the hard way, organic materials are really not that stable. So, for a car, if you've got 7 years life or 10 years would have been enough, but in the building industry, you need 25 years.
Mm.
Nevertheless, I developed a product, we got stability. I actually met with DuPont in Finland. Do you want to know the whole story?
Yes, sure.
I met with DuPont in Finland, I discussed it with them, and of course they were interested, particularly for the motor car industry, where you can't do anything with the front window in particular. But they do want to remove the heat coming into the car because it's uncomfortable when you get into a car. Secondly, you want to make the cabin as comfortable as possible for the passengers and for the driver, and also to reduce air conditioning costs, because air conditioner uses a lot of petrol. So they tested the product and they came back and they said, Victor, you know what, the product takes away about 85% or 83% of the infrared, but the light transmission is only 57%. In other words, for a motor car, it's got to be minimum 70. So they weren't prepared to spend the money on the R&D. They said, when you get it right, come back and see us. So I actually got two very big firms in America, one called Southern Clay Products, who we used one of their products in our formula, and Epilin, a big dye manufacturer, infrared dye manufacturer, and I set up a meeting in the States for all of them. I put the proposition to them that, listen, I don't have the money to do the work, but if you guys take it on, you'll make it, you'll supply the goods. There is actually a potential market with DuPont. They took it on, it cost about $2 million. Unfortunately, they still couldn't improve the light that much. So that project then just died. This was about 2005. Then I left it for about 5 years, but in the meantime, thinking about it all the time, and eventually I decided, I think from what I've learned, I'm now gonna come up with what I call the most advanced glazing in the world. A, it'll let the light through, which is, you know, I wasn't going to lose out again. We'll remove all the UV, we'll remove all the near infrared, we'll remove all the thermal as well. And we will collect that infrared, I call it waste product, and convert that to power.
Yeah.
And that's what we've developed. It's really the most advanced system today. So it's a glass that gives you all your insulating properties, reducing lighting, heating, and cooling costs, and at the same time gives you the extra benefit of producing power.
That's fascinating. Now, before we go on, Victor, can you just drop your camera down a little bit?
Is that better, or should I sit closer?
That's a little better, perhaps a little more, because we're only just seeing the top part of your face.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So that's a fascinating story and a fascinating transition from sort of pharmacy businesses into the energy sector. And it's interesting how you took something that was essentially hit a dead end and it didn't really go anywhere, but then decided that there was an application and you persevered and transformed it.
So Jürgen, what we did then is we only work with inorganic now. That's the difference. That's difficult again, because inorganics are not as plentiful as organic materials. And also the concept, when I spoke to the Technion in Israel, they all looked at me like you're a bit crazy. I mean, you know. And then I spoke to ECU in Perth and also looked at me like a little bit cockeyed. But they took it on, and in fact, they have succeeded.
Yeah.
So it was a big challenge. Yeah, it was a difficult road, but you know what? It could never have been an easy road. Otherwise, others would have done it as well. And also, the mere fact that we're using inorganics puts us in another space to maybe competitors who are trying to work with organic, because we know organic's got a very short life.
Hmm. Yeah, now there's a couple of interesting points there in that story, of course. One of them that sort of stands out for me, and coming back to the book I talked about, and I saw an interview you did with Ant Hill magazine where you raised this as one of the important points, and that's, you know, enlisting other people's help and having partners on board.
Yes, you can never do things alone. Especially as an individual. A big company, of course, they can do it on their own. They've got the resources, they've got the manpower, they've got the science. But I have to always look out for those people, qualities, institutions, whichever, that actually can form part of my workforce, but they don't actually work directly for me. You know, they're employed by other people, but I pay them to do the job. You have to do that. Yeah. And today, in fact, Jürgen, I've got probably some of the biggest companies in the world who are now working with me and spending quite a lot of money, like Eastman Chemicals, Asahi Glass Company, and a couple of others. And they are spending the money, a big construction company in South Africa, because they want to do trials, $250,000. So a lot of money is being thrown now at the project, not into my company, but as development work or quality work or whatever on the prospect, on the technology as well. So I have to spend that money either way, which I don't have. So these big guys are actually doing it themselves. So they are helping us.
That's really good, and certainly that's they've got the clout to penetrate the market with a product when it ultimately gets to that stage, right?
You know, we're looking at some of the major players in the world today are all talking to me. We're on the global stage. As I say, there are no juniors, whether it's Dow Corning, as I say, Asahi Glass, Eastman's, Guardian. All of them are really like major global players, and that's who we're talking to today.
So how did you access those people when you had the idea and you developed some prototypes together with Edith Cowan University, I think is the way it progressed. How did you then approach the big companies that were in that industry?
Okay, so with Eastman, because one, we need to have a interlayer, the PVB interlayer or laminate. They're the biggest manufacturers in the world. So I approached them if they would manufacture my product, which is certain materials that go into that interlayer. And it took me about 6 months before they actually took on the project, because they just don't take on projects. It does cost money. And they probably spent close to $1 million today, by the way. So eventually they took it on. I convinced them to take it on. In terms of all the others, I'd already had a bit of traction going. I went to a big trade show in the US, so people saw me. Mm-hmm. I did a TED talk, which you might have seen, which pulled in a lot of weight. We've also, the university have published, well, with me, a paper which is called Nature.com, which is probably one of the most prestigious academic papers in the world. And that's very important because that gives you credibility on your technology. If they publish it, you know, that's like a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Because they really don't publish a lot of papers. They probably do about 6 a year. And every university in the world is throwing papers at them to get acknowledged. So that was another major thing. A big building construction company where people are getting to know about us because we've got quite a lot of exposure now.
Hmm.
And every time there's a new development, we put it on the website, and I keep my circle of high net worth businesses informed of where we're at all the time so they know. In fact, Asahi Glass, the big Asahi, they came to Perth to see me. So did Viracon, Eastman. You know, if they come to Perth, mate, that's a big say. That's a big undertaking.
Yeah, that's a commitment.
Even from Sydney, they don't come to Perth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had some good traction and some good connections with major global players now. The last phase we need to do is the framing, because the prototype we showed, everybody saw it, they came here themselves to see it, but you can't actually frame that product. You need a proper frame. So the next 6 months, we want to spend engineering a frame to accommodate the technology so that we can be ready for the market by the end of the year. And all these big guys are waiting to see, can they frame it now? Because that's the next challenge. So, that's what we're working on now.
Okay, well, that's exciting stuff, yeah. And I was thinking before, how could I embed one of the YouTube videos you've done showing the prototype in the podcast? But what I'll do is I'll post a link underneath the podcast so that our audience can have a look at that, because that is really impressive. I'm thinking of the one where you had half a dozen fans set up around the thing in the car park there. Yeah.
Yes. And that's what attracted a lot of people.
Hmm.
And also, you know, when I was in America about a month ago, I went to see two major architectural firms, one in Washington and one in San Francisco. Because at the end of the day, they are the people that are going to prescribe it. They're like the doctors. They'll prescribe the medication. And they are very impressed. And that's what they're looking for, because the amount of power, for example, in Europe, that you can actually draw per square meter from a building is low. It's 50 kilowatts per year. It's really not a lot of power. So architects have to now design buildings that do not use more than that kind of power per square meter. So they've got also restrictions. Otherwise, they won't get the license to build. And that's where we come in, because they need every product that can actually either save energy or produce energy to be incorporated. And they will work with us as well, and they are major firms. So within this year, we will do a lot more visiting, marketing, PR with the big construction companies, engineers, and of course, architects. Probably from July onwards, we've already got potential greenhouse to do of about 10,000 square meters and a building for next year. And because we can't do anything till next year, because we need to finish off our framing and final testing this year.
Yeah, that all sounds pretty exciting. So
it is.
Now, I heard you describe, the whole issue around the problem of energy usage and fossil fuels and so on, and describe this in terms of we all need to become part of the supply side. So in other words, instead of just trying to look at reducing our energy usage, let's see how every one of us can actually produce energy and help that equation. And so that's what you've been describing there in terms of the architects as well, looking at, you know, both sides of that equation.
The whole answer is exactly that. Is A, there's got to be a design revolution to accommodate this energy revolution, because the products that we're producing, and although they are windows, but they've got to have a little bit something if they're doing something else.
Yeah.
And design, in other words, you might not have the facades where you've got four by four square meter windows, you know, huge. They might have to reduce their size a little bit, like 2x2 or that type of thing. So I'm saying that they have to also change their way of thinking. And I believe the actual consumer is the answer, because they, as you say, could form both parts of the equation, which is the supply side, because they are the demand side. So they can actually be the solution. And the big thing, it's on site. There's no coming via cables from the grid, where, of course, they're unsightly, they're hugely costly to maintain.
That's right, and, yeah.
I don't think the governments today have got the money to actually keep them going and maintaining them, or even build new ones, because they run into billions and billions of dollars. So I believe the answer is to produce the energy on site, and that way you don't lose your power, and that's the right way to do it. The consumer is the answer, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. And as you say, the cost of infrastructure and perhaps new infrastructure for you know, newer technologies is can be debilitating.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, that's a major problem for them now, because they have to supply your power. If we only initially supply you 25% of your power, they have to supply the rest. But their revenue is dropping. And they got the predicament where they, and they know it's going to drop further as we move a couple of years down the track, that they actually, can they afford to spend billions on infrastructure when in fact they're not going to even have the money to cover it. Mm. So it's a big predicament for them. And you know what, Jürgen, we are looking to become part of the zero net energy generation people. We want the buildings to be self-sustainable. It will include several technologies, not just ours.
Yeah.
You know, we eventually might be able to provide 50% of the energy, but you need other technologies which will be energy reducing, you know, so that we can come down to that 50 kilowatt per square meter. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And you still have the challenge, which, you know, at this stage I can't see a solution for, is that you're only generating power when the sun shines.
Yes. So how that would work is, of course, you would store them in batteries.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would draw your power. It's not a big issue. In fact, we've discussed this with everybody. It's the battery technologies are also getting better.
Mm.
It's getting smaller and they can store more. And we believe the answer is that I'm suggesting is that you produce it, you store it. I mean, the batteries can sit anywhere in the garage or wherever, it doesn't matter. And you can draw off that, and when that's dry, you go to your regular electricity, and the next morning it charges up again. Mm. Every day it will charge up, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. So well, how do you describe what you do in one sentence if somebody meets you at one of these trade shows or somewhere for the first time? What do you tell them?
That we have produced the most advanced glazing in the world. Mm. And it has five features, and I mention them. That's what I would say.
Okay. So what do you say about the five features?
Okay, so it has five features. Number one, it removes your UV. It has thermal properties. It has solar properties. It has daylighting properties that lets the light through. It is safety glass by form that has got an interlayer. And it produces electricity from the waste infrared.
Hmm.
So it's actually six properties. That's
yeah. Well, that's good, because that certainly would generate interest, I would imagine, and lead to a lot of conversations. Now, I believe it. There's also the option there to actually have kind of how do you call it? Basically, make it non-transparent at the flick of a switch. So, for example, for privacy or darken the room.
Correct. You know what, Jürgen? Basically, what we have produced is a self-powering unit as well. So you don't depend on external power to use it to do whatever you want to use it for. So you can power the LCD glass. That's the one that becomes transparent or not transparent. You're going to use it to power, of course, stuff in your home and the building. It's self-powering glass. The biggest problem they've got with a switchable LCD glass is to get power to the glass is very difficult if you're going to plug it into mains.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It's a problem. With us, we would actually provide our own power to supply the power to work the LCD glass. And that's a different feature. So we're trying to become power independent.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a whole range of features there that are pretty exciting.
There are. One other thing, Jürgen, you know what? We do not have to change the technology. We are now waiting for the solar industry, which are spending billions on trying to improve better solar cells, in other words, efficiency cells. So we're using currently cells that are 10% efficient, but we know that 18% are going to come out later this year from the people we're working with. Our power will actually nearly double just by getting better solar cells. So the technology is there. We're just waiting for the cell people to improve their better conversion rate cells.
Yeah, well, that's it. That certainly will make a big difference, double the amount of power there.
That's happening, so it's a fact. That's a fact. Yeah, we just got to wait.
Yeah. So within Tropiglass Technologies, what do you spend most of your time doing on a day-to-day basis?
You know what? I basically plan the map out the research program with the universities.
Yeah.
And then I meet with them probably three times a week. I go there to make sure that things are moving on track, or they're not. We've got to make certain directional changes. Of course, I'm pretty busy on capital raising. I'm pretty busy on naturally the PR and the, I wouldn't call it the sales side, but keeping in touch with my major interested parties. I do quite a lot of talks. I was invited to do a talk in Perth to the government, to the property arm of the West Australian Government, Land Corp. I did a talk at the University in Tokyo, in Canada. So that's basically what I do now. Yeah.
So you're the PR guy for the business and for the product.
For the PR, the product, part of the development. Although I don't do any of the physical development work, the university do it, but I'm part of it, and there's the patents, and but that's all going to change because we're probably going to look at listing the company in the next 3 to 6 months. We've had quite a few approaches from brokers that they'd like to list it.
Yeah.
So we're looking at that as well, so we can get 5 or 10 million into the company so that we can have it adequately staffed, because it needs people now. I mean, I've got people in the States who work for me. Otherwise, you can't do things. You can't be everywhere. I've got Canada. I've got people in Japan. So I remunerate in a small way, but I do have feet on the ground elsewhere. Otherwise, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But hopefully, when we raise proper money, people will get a job. I've got good people that work for me and around me who are just waiting to be employed properly.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're the sort of people you want, because they believe in you.
They believe in me. They believe in the product. And they will, the minute that we get proper money in, they will have proper jobs, yeah.
So what's the business model that you're planning to run with the technology? Are you looking at a licensing model, or how are you thinking of approaching that?
Yes, we do. The model is definitely to sell licenses, of course, to collect royalties.
Yeah.
We're not just in manufacturing. we want to keep on promoting the R&D to keep that, to keep us in front, otherwise we will fall behind. So our revenue stream is from licensing and then royalties, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, yeah. So clearly,
so we want to be heavily invested in equipment. We don't want to be involved in equipment which other people have got.
Yeah.
We'd rather spend the money on human capital, marketing, and of course, PR and marketing, yes.
Hmm. And working on the research, as you say, which, you know, if I look at your website and having listened to several of your talks, that clearly is where your strength is and where your passion is.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the developer will trademark, you know, so on the marketing, PR and all that, that's where we need people and we need money as well.
Yeah. So is there something that keeps you awake at night that worries you about where Tropic Glass is headed or where you're at right now?
Well, you do have sleepless nights. They're fewer and fewer now because we're at a much further development stage and whatever. But yes, there were many sleepless nights, that's for sure. And money was always an issue. Mm. Raising money is always an issue, but that's got easier. So as you advance closer to a commercial product, raising money gets easier.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely as you have something, a prototype to demonstrate, yeah.
Much easier. Mm. Even the people now that I'm working with to develop the frames, they're encouraged to be part of it because they can see that this looks like this could be a product for the market, yes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's fascinating story. So how do you keep balance? Do you sort of take time off from work and do other things?
Well, Jürgen, you know what? It doesn't take a lot of hours. That's the point. I would go to the university 3 afternoons a week because I don't have too much else to do and I love to go there. The rest of my work is an hour here and an hour there, 2 hours there. I play tennis every week. I play golf every week. Probably the amount of hours I'm putting in, I'd say probably 15 hours a week would be about what I do.
Mm. Well, that's a pretty good model to aspire to, given you know what you've been able to achieve there, obviously with a lot of help from you know the people that you've mentioned already.
You need those to be working with you, otherwise you'd be doing 60 hours a week, that's for sure. But that's where it is now, so it's really comfortable for me, and I don't really have a job, you know, like don't have to be anywhere at 8 o'clock or 8:30 or 9, you know, I don't really have a job now.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some meetings, but they're normally spaced out to suit me at 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock, a couple of broker meetings, whenever they are, but, you know, they're always like in the afternoon. So, yeah, it's my lifestyle is good now, but to get the product to where it was, the first 2 years was not easy. I mean, a lot of headaches. So I suppose you've got to put that into the balance. You can't look at more or less how easy I'm taking it now.
Mm.
But it wasn't that easy in the beginning. It's tough because, you know what, nobody's sure what's going to happen because it's never been done before.
That's right. And I'm sure there was a lot of hard work that went into it and a lot of 60-hour weeks in those times.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
But now it's on a very nice keel for me.
Hmm. So what do you see as kind of the risk and the opportunity cost for going out on a limb like you have here and, you know, thinking outside the box and taking an approach that nobody's done before?
Okay, the high risk is that it doesn't work.
Hmm.
You're talking when you start... When you start developing your new concept, well, the high risk is, of course, it's a load of bullshit. It doesn't work. It sounds great. Everybody thinks I'm crazy, which they did because nobody's done it before. That's the high risk. That's where I put in my own money because nobody else would put money in there.
Yeah.
What was the other question?
Well, I guess the opportunity cost, which basically says, you know, how do you know you're working on the right thing, I suppose, because... you could be doing something else with that time and money.
You know, I just knew it was the right thing because, again, when I went to one of the big US trade shows to exhibit my... In fact, I tested the market first, so I didn't just jump in, as I say. After 2 years, we made a little 20 by 20, which is not much, but we could demonstrate the principle that it actually turned fans. So that... Just let me switch this off. So we demonstrated that, and that showed quite a lot of interest. People were interested in this. Clear glass window producing power, driving fans. So that's where I actually got to meet some of the bigger guys like the Guardians and the Viracons and many others through that initial contact 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how I knew that. And then I met a guy by the name of Selkowitz, who was from the University of... San Francisco there, I just forget the name of it, who's a big shot in the energy side, works for the government, and he actually makes all the codes and the rulings, and he did a paper, and I spoke to him where he said that as much as advanced as the low E, the energy efficient glass is today, it's got to change that within the next 30 years, he's talking, or by the year 2030, it's got to be showing other features like producing power.
Mm-hmm.
Dow Corning did a video about 5 years ago, a futuristic video, showing the same. So they're all talking about it, but yeah. Nobody's done it. So when that's what made me do it. So when I did my 2020 and I had quite a lot of traction and interest, I realized that this is the way to go. So I put in all our efforts into it. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so you had a very strong belief in your own invention, but you had a basis of, you know, knowledge that the market was looking for something like that.
Yeah, more advanced. It had to be, because it can't be the same. As much as they were refining and improving materials for coatings, it had to actually deliver more than just that.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's correct.
Hmm. Well, it's a fascinating story, and we really appreciate you sharing it with our audience, Victor. It's time, I think, now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round where... You know, it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field,
yes,
learn from the experience of somebody like yourself. And there's about six questions we have, and hopefully you're going to have a really fascinating answer. I'm sure you'll have a fascinating answer to each one. So the first one is, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Well, I don't know. You either are or you aren't. I'm not sure how to answer that. You either are, have got that mind, and you can see a bit into the future, or you haven't got it.
Yeah.
Now, I saw the future definitely in energy and the environment. That's how I started. But you have to know, you have to have a bit of a futuristic opinion of if you want whatever you're going to get involved in, but you've got to have it.
Yeah, so look to the future and be a bit inquisitive perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, what if.
Correct.
And what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas? Do you have a structured approach or?
No, my approach is come up with what you think would be a concept that could work.
Mm-hmm.
And then formulate a process to start making it and getting there. And that's like what I did with the university then. I approached them and said, this is what I want to make. I'm not sure how we're going to get there, but this is what I want to make. These, I believe, are the ingredients we should be looking to use, or they may be better today, but that's the end result. So they work from the end inwards, as opposed to starting from something and hoping to get somewhere. I gave them the full guideline of the end result, and an indication of a lot of the materials, I think, that would actually get us there. But they had to do all the hard yards.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like from what you were describing earlier, you saw a need in the marketplace, which initially was related to car windows and like reducing the energy absorption of the interior of the car, and then kind of expanded that out. So started with the need, then had some ideas around how you might fulfill that need.
Correct. You've got to start with a game plan with an end result and how you'd get there. You can't start with something and hope you're going to, and you're not sure where you're going. It doesn't work.
Yeah, so don't start. So the idea has to match a practical use.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a hard thing to teach universities, because scientists don't really care about commercial science.
Yeah, that's right.
I had to educate them that whatever we're doing, whatever process you're doing, you've got to understand it's got to be able to be made on a big scale.
Yeah. So, yes, it's still like that nowadays. Certainly was like that when I was there.
Hasn't changed.
Yeah. Okay, now how do you, what's the best way you know of to keep a project on track like this, where you've got, you know, lots of different partners and international people working on it together with you? How do you keep track of things and keep everything moving forward and to time?
That's where it's people management.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's actually keeping people under control, and that's not easy. That's the answer. It's difficult, but you have to manage the people and try and keep them in line all the time.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't always work properly, so you lose a week. That's what happens. If you don't, you lose time, and it does happen. And you don't recover that time, I can tell you.
So what's your approach then?
My approach is, as I'm saying, I do my best. I mean, you don't want to fight to the people you're working with, because that would be poison. Is to try and explain them it's important. We've got to be here by this date, guys, because I have to show a sample to so-and-so and so-and-so and push them to deliver on time, which doesn't happen easily with them. And you have to accept that. And I've also mellowed on that side, because they're different scientists. So it's people management. You've got to control that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're focused very much on explaining the why. I mean, there's a fascinating book by Simon Sinek on Start With Why, which is, sounds like that's the philosophy you're employing.
Yes.
Getting people to buy in, which, you know, that explains why you've been so successful in getting other people to buy in, whether it's partners or, you know, international employees, I'll call them, that aren't actually drawing a wage from you at this stage. They obviously believe in what you're doing and believe in you, so, yeah.
Correct. Now, they've all got to believe in me, because otherwise they wouldn't do it, and they wouldn't do it for as they call it, tickies, you know, for small money. But they do, because they believe that if it will work out, that there will be something in it for them, and there will be. So people have to believe in me. Investors, they all have to believe in me. They're putting the money in me. Doesn't matter how good your technology sounds, looks, it's you they're putting the money into, because they trust you. And they think you know what you're doing, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's great advice. So make sure that, you know, you get belief in you as the business owner and the key person in the business.
Yeah, and they have to believe in you as well.
So
the message that you come with to any investors, it's got to be a strong message that you are committed. The other big thing is that I have my own money in the business. People love to hear that.
Yeah.
If you can't show that, then, you know, I don't think people would invest in you either. They want to know that you've actually taken the big risk. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got skin in the game as well.
Got it.
They do so, yeah. All right. So finally then, what's the number one thing that you think people can do to differentiate themselves?
From?
From other people in their industry, their competition.
Well, the only way is you've got to be a little different. I can't explain how, but in my case, I knew how. I knew what's on the market, and I knew if I wanted to be different, we had to be one better than what the market's currently got and offer. And that's how I approached it. So that's the way they need to look at it. It's no good going head on with a big competitor.
Yeah.
You need to be able to offer something a little better, whether it's a better a feature in forms of performance, like I'm offering, or a design or something, but there has to be a slightly better offer if you want to be better.
Okay, that's very sound advice, and being better doesn't mean to say you can be better than a big company or anything, but as you point out, it's, you know, what's your strength and making sure that that's what you do really well, better than anybody else.
Correct.
All right. Well, you've told us a little bit about the future for Tropiglass Technologies in terms of possible venture. No, sorry. Words escape me now. They're going to market.
To listing.
Listing, that's it. Yeah. So what do you see as the future longer term?
The future longer term is either we get a big a partner, or we do a listing, because now we need real money to motivate, to get increase the management, and to really become professional.
Yeah.
That's what has to happen now.
Do you see a lot of competition out there for this kind of product in the industry?
Absolutely. There are probably 7 of the 8 top universities, and I'm talking about the MIT, talking about Harvard, Stanford, Cambridge. They're all trying to do the same now.
Yeah. So there's a bit of urgency about commercializing this, and hopefully you've got things well protected from a patent point of view.
Well, we have, but you know what? It's the problem with these big guys is when they get to grant money from business or government. MIT just got $69 million from General Electric to do so. Cambridge got £25 million from somebody. You know, I battle on my arse in this country. But they get big subsidies and grants to actually do the work, and they can do it faster than me, of course. But we're more advanced than them now. They're not at our level yet in terms of size and performance. So that's why we have got to get on the market by next year.
Yeah. I always find it a little sad, you know, that in Australia we have, there's so many examples of this kind of thing where the funding's just not there. And as you say, the big international universities or companies get involved, and the resources they can bring to bear are just massive.
And I've battled here all the time, but you know where most of my support's coming from now? The States.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen, and something will happen there where we may get a major partner. Somebody may buy the technology, you know, I don't know, but all my focus and all my interest is coming from the US and Europe.
Yeah.
But this thing here, absolutely nothing.
Yes, a little unfortunate for Australia.
Yeah, it's the problem.
All right, well, let's move on to our competition again. And I should have mentioned this to you at the beginning, but what we really want to do is put something out there that you can learn from our audience. So what can they contribute back to you in terms of comments or information in the podcast? So have a quick think about that. So the prize today is a copy of the book Making Ideas Happen. It's talks about overcoming the obstacles between a vision and reality. It's by Scott Belsky, and in that he actually says, you know, everybody has the capacity to make ideas happen, but they've got to be prepared to do certain things. So he kind of steps you through, and he has case studies there of some of the big ideas, and really retro engineers those. What did people do to make their ideas happen? So, Victor, what would you like people to tell you for that?
Are they going to listen to this interview?
I certainly hope so.
Okay, so I'm happy to hear any comments, good or bad, that comes back.
Okay, well, so give us your comments about Victor's business, about his invention, perhaps suggestions, some ideas that might help Victor do some more with what he's got there. And if you leave your comments under the video, and I'll get Victor to come back in a couple of weeks, have a look at the comments and award the prize to the ones that he likes best.
Thank you so much, Jürgen. Thank you.
Excellent. So finally, well, actually one or two more things. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business that wants to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
Commitment. And you've got to actually have staying power. Because often you get disappointed, it doesn't work, it's easy to walk away. Mm. Got to have the staying power, and you've got to have commitment.
Okay. Yeah, so that's really good advice. So commitment, staying power, don't get bowled over by any little barriers.
Because you'll have them. And a lot of people walk away because they can't handle the barriers, because there are many that you're going to come. But you need staying power. You've just got to stick the course.
Yeah. And it reminds me, of course, of the famous saying by Thomas Edison, I think it was, when he invented the light bulb, and he said there were, he hasn't failed 1,000 times. He's found 1,000 1,000 things that don't work. So.
That's right.
Yeah. So this has been great, Victor. Where can people reach out to you and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today?
They want my website. Why don't they go to my website? They can want my email address. What do they want? What do I give? I don't know.
Whatever you prefer.
They can send me emails, vic@tropiglass.com.
Okay. Well, we'll post the link to that, and also to the Tropiglass website underneath the video. And if people want to contact Victor directly, maybe you've got a spare few million that you want to contribute to his research, that would be fantastic.
Thank you so much, Jürgen. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
And finally, who would you like to see me interview on this podcast in future, and why?
Who would I you mean other than you?
Who would you like to see me have as guest on this podcast?
I don't know. I can't answer you. I don't know. I'm sure you got plenty, but I can't think of one offhand.
All right, then. Okay, well, thank you so much, Victor. It's been great to have you on the podcast. It's been great to learn a lot more about the intelligent glass that Tropiglass is developing and where it's headed. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens down the track and actually seeing some commercial product in play and watching what happens. So, and I'll stay in touch and try to find out more as we go forward.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks, Jürgen.
Thanks, Victor.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Victor and learning about Tropiglass Technologies as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. It's a fascinating story of a passionate entrepreneur who is contributing to changing the world for the better. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Victor Rosenberg. That is VictorRosenberg. Now, I think I misspelt that, so we'll try that again. VictorRosenberg. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/Victor Rosenberg. So that will have all the links and everything that we spoke about in this episode, plus all the show notes for you to read. Now remember, leave your comments underneath that blog post and the video for your chance to win a copy of the book Making Ideas Happen by Scott Belsky. Give Victor feedback on his business, his idea, and his product suggestions that might help Victor with what he is doing. Of course, if you have some spare cash, to help finance the company, I'm sure Victor would be really happy and welcome that as well. Of course, I'll get Victor to swing by, as always, in a couple of weeks' time to have a look at the comments and choose the one that he likes best for the book prize. Thank you very much for listening or viewing the InnovaBuzz podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the wonderful entrepreneurs that we interview here. We'd love you to review this podcast. It helps us rank better in iTunes and Stitcher, and of course it also gives us some feedback for improving future podcasts. So they really do help us get found, and your feedback, as I said, helps us improve. So you can review us both on iTunes and on Stitcher, and of course while you're there, subscribe so that you never miss a future episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.